I forgot to share it.
Okay.
It's okay. It's okay. Just recouping from my minister.
Oh, yeah, you married some people.
Yeah. Yep.
That's good, man. That's awesome. I noticed, did you have
Circle Track? Circle Track, guys. You know? Oh. Like, yeah.
Are we live?
We are.
That was a little different. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was probably rough hanging out with Circle Track guys. I'm not.
No, they were actually really cool. I was surprised after all the shit you've told me about them over the years. Yeah, they're like actually pretty cool.
Yeah. Did anybody get hit with a tire iron?
I think there was only one fight at the end of the night. So
okay, that's fairly standard operating standard procedure.
The bride was not happy. Trackers. Not happy at all. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. That stuff's typically frowned on, man. It's 2023. Other than that,
it was a great wedding. We had a really good time.
Did you?
Oh, yeah.
Promise? Did you behave yourself?
I think so.
Did you have cocktails before you performed the ceremony?
Yeah, they got ready in my basement and played golf. And yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
I suppose these are some like random people you met at a bar in Memphis, Missouri or something.
No, I knew them. But like when they were first dating, I was like, oh, you could tell they kind of liked each other, and they were acting. They're, you know, they're playing the game that they didn't like each other. But when one would walk off, the other one would be like, "Where'd he go? Where'd he go? Where'd he go?"
Yeah, yeah.
So I was like, "You guys are probably gonna end up getting married, you know?"
Are you sure?
And then of course I said, "Oh, I'll marry you. You know, if you ever, I'll come out of retirement."
In the picture, then, you had a beer can in, like, while you were doing.
Yeah. Hey, man, I require alcohol to do services. I mean. Mm-hmm. It's just,
yeah.
It's a lot of pressure.
It's the Lord's work, man. It is.
Yeah. I was drinking a Busch Light. I mean, you know, I was, I forgot my cooler. Yeah. I ran home and got that before the reception.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let me run home real quick and snag this cooler.
It's
my lifeblood. Do you, I tell you, man, I think people sleep on how that's a stressful endeavor. Like overseeing a wedding, like, and you know that.
It's like
everybody's
their biggest day. You don't want to mess it up.
Word. Yeah.
Yeah. Everything you say, they'll remember. Like, you know.
Mm-hmm. I don't think that I messed up once this time. I don't. Well, if I did, I don't remember because I had enough drinks. See, it's the key to everything.
Yeah. The key to everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I don't know if that's the case,
have enough but... you forget.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah. Just don't remind me tomorrow how it went. Well, I'll be good, you know, because in my head, I did great. So,
crushed it.
Let's just go with that.
JT walks off stage and is like, got another one.
Yep.
Good job. Yep. There we go.
Yep. You should have brought that microphone because I'd be dropping that sumbitch right now. Oh, yeah.
Jeez Louise. All right, roll the intro. Show. Yeah. Listen, I've never had any problem expressing my opinions, but what we're doing here is bigger than that. These are conversations that need to be had in an unfiltered way. Drag racing's all I've ever done. It's all I care to do. I respect the history, I appreciate how far we've come, but I want more for this sport, and I'll fight for it. It's uncut, it's unfiltered, this is the show of shows. The biggest names in drag racing. No holds barred. This is the Great American Motorsport. Drag racing. Prove me wrong, I'll wait. To be honest, for someone to prove me wrong on drag racing being the great American motorsport, I really am. I've waited and waited and waited for someone to like hear me say that in this pre-recorded bit and like have an opinion. Cool. No one's challenged me, and I'm here for it because I believe without a shadow of a doubt that drag racing is the great American motorsport. What's up, gang? Wes Buck here, Drag Illustrated Magazine, checking in. It is Wednesday, September 20th, 2023. Got a barn burner of a show lined up for you today, as always. Got a couple of little housekeeping things I want to take care of here right away. First and foremost, huge shout out to all of you for being a part of this each and every week. Remember to click like, click share, click subscribe. Help us spread the gospel of drag racing. It really means a lot, makes a huge difference. And hey, man, do your part, right, to help us shine a light on the sport of drag racing and all the incredible men and women that make this sport what it is. As I said, we got a big one for you today. We got Matt Hartford fresh off a huge win at the NHRA National event that kicked off the countdown to the championship at Maple Grove Raceway, the House of Chaos, as it is now known in Pennsylvania. Really incredible weekend. I think we could honestly spend the entire show kind of breaking down Matt Hartford's weekend. And I think we may well do that. I may punt on everything that we have planned for today's show, because I feel like this is a true career-defining moment in many ways for Matt Hartford. I'm looking forward to chatting with him here in just a few minutes. I want everyone to know that we did our due diligence to get everyone's favorite drag racer right now, Donnie Hager. We did our best to get the winner of the $1 million bracket race from this past weekend at Gateway Motorsport, excuse me, Worldwide Technology Raceway Park outside just across the Mississippi River from downtown St. Louis. But this is the coolest part of this story, is that Donnie's got a full-time job, and Donnie is working a 24-hour shift at a fire station today, and wasn't 100% confident that he'd be able to be present for an interview. So we're going to do a standalone episode later this week, so keep an eye out for that. It's going to be a sit-down interview with Donnie, recapping his experience at the Million and everything that he encountered en route to what is undoubtedly the biggest win of his life. So huge time, honestly. Sellout crowd at Maple Grove Raceway. Congratulations to the Koretsky family, the NHRA, everybody involved. I gotta tell you, there is nothing that makes me feel better than seeing a racetrack full of people. I was looking at photos from Maple Grove over the weekend and following along on NHRA.tv and, of course, on Fox Sports, and I'm going, how can we not be, collectively, as a group, overwhelmingly optimistic and excited about the sport of drag racing in 2023, especially as we find it in the fall of 2023. 700 some odd race cars at the Million in St. Louis, a packed house at Maple Grove Raceway for the NHRA National event, PDRA Carolina Nationals presented by Redline Synthetic Oils, taking over Darlington Dragway, barn burner of an event out there, No Prep Kings in Las Vegas. We've got so much drag racing going on that it's really hard. Drag Week, Hot Rod Magazine's legendary Drag Week kicking off this week. It's an incredible thing. And if you really look around and you start to take stock of, I was thinking about this, and this is maybe a challenge that we can all work on together, because I think it's worth noting, and it's something that I think as a group we should probably consider more than we do, and that's the economic impact of these events in various venues, various parts of the country, and also to the automotive aftermarket. It's funny, if you talk to anybody in the political landscape or anybody that's tied to SEMA or PRI or any of these big entities that exist in our sport, they're really quick to talk about how those events impact the local community, or how our sport or the automotive aftermarket, the size of it in terms of dollars and cents, right? And I think a lot of times in drag racing, I was really laboring over this over the weekend, we seem as a group, and I'm lumping myself in here as well, so like guilty as charged, I'm not pointing fingers, but it's something that I wonder if we should start to explore a little more frequently. It seems like the pass fail for pretty much every drag race under the sun is how many cars showed up. Secondarily is the fan turnout. But I start to think about how much these events, these drag races, impact the communities that they're a part of. And honestly, part of the catalyst to this was the recent news that Heartland Park Topeka, outside of Topeka, Kansas, is, by all accounts, officially closing. They put it on their own personal social media channels, all their official accounts that are tied to Heartland Park Topeka, that they would indeed be closing at the conclusion of this season. And I find it interesting that throughout all the messaging that's been sent out, they continue to talk about the value that the racetrack and the events that the racetrack draws, how they contribute to the local community. And I think on our side of the fence, and this is maybe like a call to action to everybody that's a promoter, a race operator, of which there are many at this point in time. I mean, obviously the NHRA is the tent pole, right? They're I lovingly refer to the NHRA as the NFL of drag racing, without a doubt, the major leagues. they do their part, but there's a ton of other promoters, sanctioned series events that exist with considerable success across this great nation of ours. And I think that maybe we should spend a little bit of time this offseason reflecting on how much these events that we put on impact the local communities. I think about the small towns that exist around so many drag strips in America and what these events mean to those communities in terms of hotels, restaurants, gas stations, everything else that comes with it. Think about the economic needle mover that Drag Week is, as an example. Hot Rod Drag Week rolling from town to town to town over the course of this week. It cannot be overlooked. And I think we're not, like I said, we tend to want to labor over how many people showed up. Like, oh, we had a big crowd of fans, or we had 800 race cars, or we had 400 race cars, whatever the number may be. But I wonder if we shouldn't take it another step further in some of our promotional efforts to really drill down on how much. I mean, and honestly, I was messing around on the internet over the weekend, and I'm going, there's a lot of readily available metrics, like average spends by these people. And it wouldn't take a ton of work for someone to look at the lay of the land of their event and go, okay, 60% of these people stay at hotels. The other 40% perhaps stay at the track. Most of these guys are going out to eat types, and really just try to break that down into what kind of contribution each one of these racers make to a local economy during a race weekend. Because again, I think we would be surprised. And I wonder if we couldn't get a little bit more enthusiasm or involvement from the local communities if that was the tip of the sword, if that was what we were talking about. Not how many cars showed up for No Box, not how many cars showed up for whatever, Top Dragster, but how much this event impacted our local community. I just think it's something that we should be talking about more. And I'm going to answer the call myself. And we're already starting on a little bit of a study to see, like, the Drag Illustrated World Series of Pro Mod coming up the first weekend in March 2024. I want to be able to tell the locals there in the greater Bradenton, Florida area how much business and activity this event creates locally over the course of the week. I mean, we bring racers in on a Monday and don't send anybody home until the following Monday. So you've got hundreds of racers on the property for a full week. And I really think that we need to be a little bit more proud of what the drag racing community means and what the drag racing industry provides all these little towns and big towns, for that matter, that we go to throughout the course of the year. So I don't know why, to be honest, I felt like starting the show with that notion, but it's something that has kind of hit me in the stomach and felt like a point, a talking point that we can lean into as we move forward in the future. But anyways, I just wanted to touch base on that. I guess we're down a guy. Mike Carpenter, my longtime teammate here on the show, is on vacation. I think this is vacation number 6. We need to hold Mike.
It is, I'm pretty sure. And he always gives me shit.
Yeah. I know. He's like perpetually on vacation. I don't know who's okaying this stuff. Maybe somebody should check in with Nancy. I'm not sure.
Nancy, I'm the HR department.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Is he asking for this time off, JT?
Nope.
Okay. Well, we need to have a talk about that. Anyways, guys, I want to, again, welcome you to the show. And I've got him in the green room right now, so let's not waste any time. JT, why don't you introduce the man of the hour fresh off.
I figured you needed a breath after that. That whole intro there.
Shut up, JT.
Hey, gang. And that was the show. Wes Buck signing off.
You want me to just punt on it?
No, I'm just joking.
Don't you think that's a worthwhile anecdote?
Oh, like, absolutely.
Because we do. All we ever talk about is like, 400 cars were at such and such. Right? They had 800 cars at Jerkwater Dragway. You know, it's like, that's all well and good. But think about, of those 800 cars, how many of them filled up with diesel this weekend at the local gas station? How many of them went to eat every night with their entire team, right? Hungry guys. That have worked their tails off.
And drinks.
It really is significant, and it's something that we're not proud enough of as a community. I mean, this is a real significant happening. I mean, if you just look at the NHRA Tour alone, 22 races crisscrossing the United States, right? Small markets, big markets, everything in between. I don't think we can really put enough emphasis on how much local activity is created when this carnival comes to town, man. It's a big freaking deal.
Yep.
Right? And it's, I don't know. I just think about those things. And if we could change our message, because our on-track product, like drag racing, our on-track product right now, really across the board, is at an all-time high. I mean, I know we always kind of default to the NA, but like Pro Stock, sick. Pro Stock bike, crazy. Top Fuel and Funny Car look better than they have in eons, it seems. I mean, our sport is in good shape, but it's all this messaging and kind of the stuff around. Like, we've spent all 2023 talking about tracks shutting down, right? Some of them aren't even officially shut down, but it's been the like the story all year long. Like, oh, Atlanta's gone. Houston's gone. Oh, Bandamere's going away. Maybe. We think Bandamere's going away. Maybe it's not. I don't know. Topeka's going away. Well, maybe it's not.
Yeah, I get it.
But why aren't we talking about the positive side of this? Is that you want to talk about ways to make sure tracks don't go away. Start using the language that resonates with this group of people, right? I mean, you have to change your messaging. And we can talk to Matt Hartford about this, because as the owner of a business, he recognizes you kind of got to change your talking points depending on who you're talking to, right?
Know the room. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you got to read the room. And it's like, if you're talking to Greg Anderson about piston rings, you can probably have a much different conversation than if you're talking to a bunch of private equity guys that don't know shit from apple butter when it comes to piston rings or torque converters or whatever else. Right. Yeah. So I think,
or a city council or anybody else, like, yeah, you're not going to talk about the hardcore drag stuff, but you're going to talk about how much money it generated for their community.
That's
what we do. Yeah.
I know. We go to drag racers go to a city council meeting and want to talk about 60 foot times. Let me tell you something, Bob. My car went 918 this week, and they're looking at you like you have three heads. But if instead the conversation was,
they know that he shaved three tenths off of that too. Right.
Did you know that we had 700 hotel rooms rented this weekend, full this weekend, because of XYZ drag race? I mean, that's a much more meaningful conversation. But again, we as a sport so frequently just do what we've always done. And I do think as we head into like whatever this new world is that we're living in, we got to change some of the talking points. We got to change the language we're using, because drag racing is, I know I use this phrase a lot, but I mean, it moves the needle. Everywhere we go, big events, small, everywhere in between, has an impact on that local community, and we're not proud enough of it. So anyways, guys, I want to remind you that this week's episode of The West Buck Show is brought to you by, where's my notes? Oh my goodness. Who's the first
one? Just wing it.
Wing it. Oh, Stroud Safety. Ladies and gentlemen, remember that each and every episode of The West Buck Show is made possible by way of our friends at Stroud Safety. Stroud is known for their top quality racing safety equipment, from drag chutes and seatbelts to fire suits and blankets, all 100% made in America. Log on to StroudSafety.com today and make sure you tell them we sent you. All right, guys. Without any further ado, JT, let's bring him on. The one, the only, a living legend at this point in time, Matt Hartford. What's going on, buddy?
Hey, how are you?
I'm good, man. How about you? I mean,
I don't even breathe. Just breathe a little bit. Go get a drink. Yeah, I'm good. You know, calm down. Just
I love it.
Now Matt's going to pick on me. Okay, here we go. Here we go. Well, hey, I know you've been doing something of a PR tour after the big win in Maple Grove, but I would really like to go back post Indy. You think about the NHRA US Nationals. A lot of drivers can hang it up, so to speak, after winning that event. And being there and seeing the energy and the enthusiasm in your camp on the heels of that win, couldn't have asked for more, right? A career defining happening. But I guess a few days later, you find yourself in the hospital. Like, can you?
Yeah, Indy, the biggest race of the year, right? It's Indy. I mean, you win Indy. We should still be celebrating from winning Indy, is how I looked at it. But no, it's, you know, your body will tell you when something's not right. And by Thursday evening after Indy, my body had told me something wasn't right. And I found myself in the emergency room. And lo and behold, they decided they wanted to take some organs out of me just because, you know, one, they said it was going to cause me issues if they left it in there, meaning the appendix. And two, you know, I was looking at it. Maybe we could balance the car a little bit better, you know, just get a little bit of weight out of me. So we did that, got the appendix out, and spent the next couple of days just discussing with family and doctors and crew about how the fact I was going to Reading regardless. And started my healing process, and And lo and behold, come Thursday, I got on a plane and went to Reading.
You got to take me through like some of those conversations. Like, who was the first person that you talked to about, like, I'm going to have this surgery, but I am not missing Maple Grove? Like, the wifey or the doctor? I mean, who was the first person that had to give you the green light on this?
Well, the wife was saying, you know, you're not going to Reading. And I said, no, I am. And the doctor was in the room. So I was trying to explain to the doctor that I just want to see what my abilities and what my limitations would be in 7 days from the surgery. And Amber said, no, cut right to the chase. He thinks he's getting in a race car that's going to have 4 Gs, positive and negative, when you launch in the chutes, and he's got to, you know, climb over roll cages to get in. And, you know, where do we stand on this? So there was a little bit of tension. You know, I told her she was going to have to discuss this also with my crew chief, and I knew he'd be on my side. So, but at the end of the day, she wanted to go to Reading and wanted our team to go to Reading as bad as we did. Her focus was making sure that I wasn't going to cause any long-term health effects for myself. And rightfully so, you know, that was, she's not wrong, but
agreed.
She wasn't winning that argument either. So I was going to Reading.
Yeah, no doubt about it, man. But I'm curious, like, yeah, you know, it's the conversation I think that has existed in 2023 around pros is like, you've got a real shot at this, Matt. Like, I mean, you've got a real deal race car. Team is coming together at like the exact right time. Clearly, there's no quit in this camp. So I'm just curious, like, how much did that, knowing the car you have right now, knowing the success that you had at Indy, and I'm sure planning to carry that on into the beginning of the countdown, was there some pressure that, like, even more so, it's all on you? Because now not only do you have the pressure of, like, doing a good job driving, but, like, you're physically potentially hindered by this surgery.
You know, I think adrenaline takes over on a lot of levels, and you don't even think about it. And, you know, the agreement that I had with my wife and our entire team was we were going to get there, and the only thing I was going to do was drive the car. I could use the laptop to tune the car, and I could drive the car. I wasn't doing anything else. Well, I mean, I guess anybody that's followed social media realizes that we had a miserable Friday and Saturday, and all we did was work day and night on the race car. And obviously, I was right in there as deep in as anybody on our team. And, you know, Eddie and KI and Adam and Amber, I mean, we were all of us upside down underneath, in between the car, just anything we could do to try to figure out what the gremlin was inside the car. And we found out at the end, we found out by, you know, Sunday morning, it also needed its appendix out. So we took it out, and now we're good.
Well, let's talk about that, because I think, just reflecting on the weekend, I was watching along on NHRA TV, the camera pans to you post-run, and you make the statement that you know, had a flatbed come in and haul the car off property. And it was like, and knowing you the way I do, I go, oh, he's being sarcastic. Like, this is a joke. So I immediately text Mike Carpenter, right? And I go, hey, did you see what Matt just said? And he's like, yeah, I think he's joking. And I said, I think he meant it though. And he's like, nah, that's Matt. That's just Matt being Matt. And I go, I don't know. Like, I think this really happened. And then we obviously come to find out you make the post on your social, which I got to be honest, man. Like, if we're giving out like Racer of the Week awards, or we're talking about guys that are the real deal, it doesn't get any more hardcore than loading your shit up on a flatbed, a rollback, and then going off property doing burnouts in some parking lot. So take us all through that. I think any racer worth their salt that's been in this game for any period of time has had that newfound, a gremlin has manifested itself out of, everything was fine 3 days ago, and now something's wrong. So can you kind of take us through like just that whole scenario? Like what was going on during qualifying? Intermittent miss. I mean, give us some tech talk, man. You're one of these guys that are well suited to do it.
So in Q1, we went out there and we went 54, and I think low for the session was 50. We thought we could go out there and probably run 51. And so we were way off where we thought we would have been. And so when we got back, you know, I'm looking at Eddie and he's looking at me and I'm like, why in the hell are we so slow? And he goes, I don't know. And we're looking at all the race pack data and we see all kinds of just like interference in our data. And we're like, that doesn't make sense. Okay, whatever. You know, get the car ready, make the changes that we think, go up for Q2. I let the clutch, you know, it does the burnout, but it's a little rough in the burnout. I let the clutch out in low gear. It's kind of lazy in low gear. I pull second gear, the car shuts off. Okay, well, something's definitely wrong. So we change a bunch of stuff. And when we look at the data, it lost fuel pressure. Fuel pressure, you know, went from 50 pounds down to zero. Okay, so the car won't run without fuel pressure, their EFI. So we come back around and we say, okay, let's put a fuel pump on it. Obviously, we got a bad fuel pump. So we do that. We go up for Q3. We think everything's good. Car right in the middle of the burnout shuts off and it stays running. So I go ahead and I stage the car anyway. And I tell my crew guys on the radio and I signal to both Amber and Adam. Adam's on, my brother's on one side of the car, Amber's on the other. And I signal to them that we're broke. And as soon as I let the clutch out, the car dies. So we push off the starting line. Now we're pissed. So back, tow it back to the pits, change out battery, disconnect, some wiring, a different fuel pump, some switches, just a whole, anything possible that we thought it could be. Fire the car up in the pits, goes up on the chip, no problem. Sounds great. Go up there, start the burnout, and it dies right. I mean, I literally don't even get out of the water, and it dies. At this point in time, I know we got a problem. I'm thankful it didn't happen in the final in Indy. I'm thankful that it didn't happen Q1, because had it happened then, we wouldn't have been qualified. And we tow it back to the pits. And I said, okay, guys, everything front to rear in the car that you can think of that we should change, if there's anything that we haven't changed, or even if we have, we need to change it again, because maybe we have a multiple problems. One time it looked electrical, one time it looked like a fuel pump. And I said, start changing parts, anything we got in the trailer, whatever we can do. So we changed a few things. And I said to Rob, Rob's towing out of Pennsylvania, who happens to be there. He's on the grounds with all his tow trucks because he's the towing company also for Maple Grove. I said, Rob, we need a rollback, and we need a place that we can go, a shop that we can go. It's got good lighting, where we still got more stuff we need to change in the car. And we also need a place that, you know, has, you know, an area that if we want to just try to do a burnout when we're done, we can. He goes, oh, I got a place. Don't you worry. And so we try to be quiet about this. Our goal was for this to never be public. This was supposed to be, hey, so we acted like we were rolling down to the scales, and a few people seen us, and they were wondering what we were doing. And so we get down just past the scales, and the rollback's there. You got the bed down. Up on the rollback we go, and lo and behold, Aaron Stanfield comes rolling by in a showdown car. And he's hanging out the door. I mean, he's out the window, like, just his mouth open, eyes wide open, going, what in the hell are you guys doing? I said, nothing to see here. Just keep moving. And at that point in time, I knew everybody would know, you know, because obviously you're not getting one of the pro stock teams seeing the car on a rollback, and it's not going to get around the pits. So as we're rolling out, also the Fox people decided it was time to put their camera on the car as it's leaving the grounds on a rollback. Now, we did have NHRA permission to leave, so it was not like we were doing anything that we shouldn't have been. We were just trying to keep it quiet. So we get over, you know, we go down the road, get over to the shop, unload the car, make some changes, and I go to do a burnout, and it dies again. And so we just started changing parts and fired up again, and then we basically caught the back of the car on fire because we had another electrical short in the car. So at that point in time, we basically said, uncle, changed a few things, made sure the car would start and run again, came back and said, okay, starter, fuel pump, water pump, wiring, starter wire, main wiring, ignition switch, fuel pump switch, that wire, the wires in from the battery to the charger, the wires from the battery to the disconnect switch, disconnect unit, everything has to be changed again because now we've basically burnt the wiring up in the car. So we changed it all. And everybody was saying, and this was 6 a.m. We started at 5:30, 6 a.m. on Sunday morning doing all that. And everybody's saying, is it fixed? Are you messing with us? Do you know that it's fixed? Do you know that it's not? And we're like, listen, until we can go do a burnout on the starting line and leave the line, I'm not saying anything because we thought it was fixed Q2. We thought it was fixed Q3. We thought it was fixed Q4. And we were wrong every time. So we set the car up like it was fixed and went up there, and in my mind, I was like, nothing ever happened. This is round one. Like, we had the best qualifying we ever could. We're just not qualified very well. And, you know, I feel bad for Greg. He shouldn't have been in that position. We should have never been in the bottom half against him round one. And our car ran decent. It didn't run as good as we thought, but it was definitely better and gave us something to work on because we'd missed three runs. And, you know, all those parts and all those, you know, bits and pieces are in a box, and none of them are going back on the car until they're either getting thrown away or they're going back to the manufacturer to be tested.
The whole, that whole situation, Matt, like, I'm thinking through, you're already, you're on what, day two of a 3-day race weekend. Everybody knows the grind this is. You're in the midst of a back-to-back-to-back 3-race stretch. Interjecting that kind of chaos, I mean, how, I mean, obviously you talked about the adrenaline kind of taking over, but it had to be tough to like keep everybody's head in the game when it seems like everything that could go wrong is going wrong at precisely the worst possible time, correct?
I would think so with a lot of people, but our team's a family, you know, literally some of them blood and the rest of them should be blood family. But you know, something, not at any moment in time did any of us have any harshness or shortness towards each or any one of us, because we're all there for the same reason. And everybody on our team will work as hard as the next one or try to outwork the next one. So we only had one goal, and that was to fix the problem and be ready for round one. And it didn't matter if we ate, it didn't matter if we slept, we didn't care what it was going to take. We knew that we had a problem, and if we didn't fix it, because no one else is going to come fix it, if we didn't fix it, we were going to lose round one guaranteed. So the only thing we know what to do in our team is work.
But, and honestly, like, that's drag racing. I don't know if there's a single word that kind of embodies our sport more so than that one.
Yeah.
Work. I mean, no matter where you're at in this journey, whether you're, you know, top of the food chain like you racing NHRA Pro Stock or somewhere else, this stuff requires work. Even the most successful teams, they're there because of the work that they put into it. So it's interesting because that's typically the wrench throwing, people bowing out. Like, that's a tough environment to be in. I've been in a handful of those situations myself. And I mean, it's a big credit to you, Matt, and the leadership that exists in the family cohesion that I don't think exists everywhere in our sport. I mean, do you agree? I mean, I think that in a lot of ways, that's perhaps a difference maker for your camp, is the family nature of your operation.
Look, you look around out here, and whether you look at an NHRA event or any of the other events that go on around the country, or whether it's even different forms of racing, there are teams out there that work their butts off day in and day out, and they understand what it takes. And the ones who do understand what it takes are the ones that are typically the most successful. I'm not saying that you can't be successful with the other environments, but to be successful, the number one thing that it's going to take is a team. And not one person can do this on their own, and you need everybody rowing in the same direction. And I say it all the time, whether it be, you know, here or at Total Seal, you know, if this is something that you don't want to be involved in, no one has to be involved in it. And obviously we all choose to, but if you're going to be on our team in any environment, please put your paddle in the water and row the same direction. If you're not going to be on our team, don't just leave your paddle in the water. At least take it out of the water so you're not hindering the rest of the team. And our team is rowing. Everybody on our team is trying to row faster than the other guy on our team because we all have this passion to want to win.
And it's evident, my friend. Matt, I'm curious, considering the nature and the grind that is a back-to-back-to-back race weekend, especially to start the countdown, were you guys eager to get to Charlotte, or would you have rather had the opportunity to maybe spend a week at home and kind of figuring out some of these issues and preventing them from ever happening again, or knock on wood, happening again anytime soon? Or was it important to you to keep this momentum, albeit having its moments, but to keep this momentum? I mean, you're staring down you've got a hot rod, brother. I mean, you've got an opportunity to make a big move in the coming weeks. What's the team's feelings on the situation right now?
Well, we think Q1 should be today in Charlotte. You know, we're ready. Let's go. Yeah. You know, the more time, you know, you hear it all the time, you know, the announcers in the booth up there at NHRA, you give so-and-so so many runs and they're coming for you. You hear it all the time. Look, there's 15 or 18 other teams out there that are coming for us, and we know it. So we're going to keep, you know, we got some momentum right now. By no means do we think that, you know, we've got a better car or a better drive or a better team and that's than anybody else. But what we do feel is that we have a great team. We have a great car. And if I keep my head on straight, we can run with anybody out here. So for us, our goal is stay in our own pits, keep our head down. There's 20 more rounds to go, which means there's 20 more win lights left to this championship. And we're going to treat each and every one of those as it's do or die. And we're just going to focus on that and not care about all the noise around us.
What do you make of, I mean, you have, as part of the KB Titan, you get power from them, we've had a really interesting 2023. Actually, the last few seasons, kind of this going back and forth and this huge camp rivalry that's kind of developed between the Elite Motorsports teams, the KB Titan teams. It feels like it's been really good for pro stock drag racing. I mean, we've got more cars out there than we've ever seen. A really exciting time for 500-inch pro stock racing. I mean, are you surprised at the state of affairs at this point in time with how strong this category remains? I mean, it wasn't that long ago that, you know, all the rumblings were that 500-inch pro stock racing was fixing to go the way of the dodo, car count was down, but we seem to have really turned the corner. We're going to have another race added to the schedule in 24. I mean, what's your take on kind of the pro stock state of the union right now?
You know, you go back and you look. So at the time that was all happening, you know, and I was racing pro stock then, you know, we were getting 15 pro stock cars to an event. But let's not forget, you were only getting 11 fuel cars at those events too. So, you know, was pro stock really the only class that was struggling? No, but no offense, the media made pro stock the class that was dying, not the class. And it's no different than what you're talking about racetracks. The media is what causes a lot of the negativity. And the more people that keep talking about the negative side of everything, the more people believe it. If you came out and said, every time if you said pro stock's the strongest class, and you beat that into everybody's head, sooner or later, everybody that listens to every media organization says the pro stock is the strongest class. I mean, it wasn't too many years ago that they said pro mod was taking over pro stock. Well, what happened there? That did not happen. And if you look, ProMod went from having 40 cars down to about 13 in a year.
Right. But that wasn't, in my opinion, connected to the media. Because I agree with you. The problem that exists is that salacious, scandalous headlines get traffic, right? Mm-hmm. And we've seen that. I mean, in the publishing world, it's if it bleeds, it leads. We, for 20 years, really haven't subscribed to that at Drag Illustrated, but it has hindered us at times because we don't always get the traffic that we would if we were as excited about sharing that kind of horror story news, because that's the stuff that gets passed around on social. I mean, I actually referenced this a few months ago right here on this podcast that I find it interesting. We put out an announcement. We put out a social media graphic that Heartland Park Topeka is closing. And that son of a gun will damn near go viral, Matt. I mean, it'll get hundreds of shares, thousands of comments. But I can put out a quote that's just as, or a graphic that's just as sexy at the exact same time of day that says good news. Like, hey, there's over 420 drag strips operating in North America right now successfully. It won't even get a like.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it's just interesting the way our culture or the way society is kind of programmed. And that's a tough thing. I mean, it is a really, really tough battle because you kind of, it's hard to have it both ways. You know what I mean? But it's a tough thing. I can't argue though, because it was a part of kind of pop culture in racing that like pro stock's dying.
Right.
Right?
And I lived it and I'm looking at it going, how are you saying that? If you said anything, the more correct truth was drag racing was struggling, not pro stock, but the entire everything is in its entirety. And now look at Indy. We had 22 pro stock cars. Okay. How many fuel cars?
Yeah.
Not Indy, Reading.
Yeah.
Reading had 22 pro stock cars. Fuel cars had 16 or less.
Yep.
And I'm not being critical of that because those cars are super expensive to run. If you want to fix drag racing and you want to fix the professional levels, It has to start at the top at NHRA, and the number one thing that has to change is the purse. Right now, if you lose first round at a national event in pro stock, you cannot pay your hotel room bill for a very small crew. That's ridiculous. And that's the reason that car counts have struggled, and that's the reason your, you know, World Series of Pro Mod, the pro shootout that's coming in Bradenton for pro stock, you know, funny car and top fuel, that's the reason that there's so much excitement around that, because everybody wants to go to these events, because I can win more in pro stock there or within a few thousand dollars. That'll pay the same to win there as it will to win the championship in NHRA. Tell me that that's not a problem.
I can't argue, and this is like a really delicate situation that people get up in arms about really quick, but we have the business model has to change in professional drag racing, because I think in a lot of ways, NHRA has been really reliant on just the unrivaled passion and dedication of this group of people. I mean, and it is unique. I promise you that if you had to pay, if it cost you to go bass fishing what it costs to go pro stock racing, you would not go bass fishing.
No,
you would not go whatever hobby it is. Like, I'm going to hurt JT's feelings, but like, if it cost this much to go golfing, you would not go golfing.
No,
period.
We do it because it's the best sanctioning body in drag racing in the world, bar none.
Hands
down. It's got the history. It's got, you know, getting a Wally, you eat and breathe and sleep to get a Wally.
Look no further than Amber's reaction. Like, I look forward to that when she jumps into your arms. Like, I wish we had more of that, because it's moments like that, Matt, that I think indicate to our fan base how much this stuff means. Those moments are important. And when, you know, and it's not, this isn't like, I'm not trying to like, you know, throw stones, but you do see teams like kind of take it for granted, or like just, you know, you hear that thing like, act as if you've been there before. No. Act like it's a big deal. You need to treat this like a big deal, because it is a big deal. And I agree. Where do you think what's the answer on the purse thing? Because I would argue that I think the money's there. Like, I'm not trying to do like forensic accounting here, but I look at the crowd we had in Maple Grove. I look at the crowd that was in Gainesville, the crowd that's been at so many races this year. I mean, do you agree that that's something that just has to be like a sit down moment where there's a conversation that's had? Like, we have to find a way. I don't think Matt Hartford's looking to make millions pro stock racing, but if he could at least minimize the bleeding, right? If you could at least slow the hemorrhaging, I think you'd be a lot happier. I mean, is that correct? I mean, do you feel like that's the conversation that has to happen?
It is. And by no means do I think that I have the answer for NHRA, and by no means, you know, I don't count their pennies at night, so I don't know if there's extra money. I don't know if they're having to spend their own money. I have no idea, because I don't run that business. I do run a business, and I look at our balance sheet every day, and I look at our P&L every day. I don't see that with NHRA. So the only thing that I can say from is, if you want to grow any business, the number one thing you never do to grow is cut. So if you think that cutting something helps you grow, you're wrong. And I've said this to anybody that, from Cromwell to Brad Gerber to Jeff Morton, to I've said it to a ton of different people. We need to find money, and it's up to the racers to also help and encourage and try to get sponsors to be involved with NHRA. But it's also up to NHRA to work with the teams and the sponsors that we bring to them, so it can be a mutual benefit for both. So that it can help the sport, but it can also help the racer. And think about how many top sportsmen guys, or top dragster guys, or some of these outlaw guys would love to be able to come over and get into a pro stock car. If you made it every event 50,000 to win in a pro stock car, and I'm just talking, you know, I don't know where the money comes from, but if it was 50,000 to win and 10,000 to qualify, don't you think there'd be a lot of people trying to figure out how to go to one or two or three races a year?
There is no doubt about it in my mind, you know, and right. I've seen it for me, like, as somebody who, same thing, look at a budget, look at a balance sheet, look at a P&L daily. And I'm going, I would see these purses. That's part of your marketing expense, right? I mean, if you're buying billboards, buying radio ads, buying television ads, paying for production, whatever else, you'd be surprised. And I've experienced this myself, how much more attention you can garner in these markets when you're talking about significant amounts of money. Like, yeah, for whatever reason, similar to the if it bleeds, it leads mantra, big numbers matter. Like, that's part of the sports vernacular at this point. Like, if you follow along with any stick and ball sport, there's going to be some reference to how big the money is, right? Like, whether it's in NFL, MLB, and NBA, it's in contracts, right? I mean, every freaking day on ESPN, there's another headline about
$250 million,
right? I mean, that is part of the marketing. Like, that it's that speaks to how significant this is, the scale of it, how many people are impacted by it, because the fan base knows that those numbers aren't possible without a lot of eyeballs. Like, it all works together. And I think that that is something that I couldn't agree with you more, Matt. I think if the pro stock purse were even modestly increased, we would be blown away. Because, I mean, this is tough for me to say, but I've met very few pro mod guys that didn't, like, the original dream was to race pro stock. Right. I mean, that's most door slammer guys when they.
It's the pinnacle of door slammer racing.
It's the pinnacle of door slammer drag racing. And
nothing against pro mod. It's just a different. But pro stock has always been the pinnacle, and because it's the most delicate, and it's the most precision racing and door slammer racing in the world. It's precision. That's the word.
There's no doubt, and it's a known challenge. And the thing that I like is that you see people struggle. Like, it's a class of drag racing that will make or break you. I mean, you see people, and I think it's important at times in our sport. Like, I love the accessibility of drag racing. I absolutely love it. I believe that it's the gateway to all motorsports. No matter where you end up, you likely got your start bringing your street car or your daily driver, yep, to a drag strip, a high school night or a trophy night, whatever the case may be. So the accessibility of drag racing can't be overstated. However, I do think at our sport's highest levels, this should be some shit that not everybody can do, right? Like, I know that I can't play basketball with LeBron James, right? I know that I can't. I don't even want to attempt it. And I think we don't do enough. The sport has to do a better job selling the challenge that is doing this and that it being successful at. I mean, a lot of people can maybe drive a race car, but not that many can do it really well consistently.
Yeah, and I'm still looking for somebody to get in my car that can do it well, because I'll tell you what, I struggle every week in it. These things are a handful, and by no means am I saying anything, but, you know, Eric Latino did a really good job in Pro Mod when he raced, and he had a lot of fun. And I'm just saying what he would tell you. These cars are hard to drive. You know, he got out of a clutch car in Pro Mod and got into a Pro Stock car, and he's point blank said to me he cannot believe how hard these cars are to drive. And that's coming from a guy that's seen both sides. So
I had a similar conversation with Steve Matusik. Remember when Steve got his feet wet in 500 inch pro stock racing on the mountain
in Denver, right? Yes.
So it's perhaps never more difficult than pulling second gear in sub 1 seconds.
Yes.
Right. So, I mean, I agree with you. It is a extremely challenging endeavor. And so I guess that's,
but people want to do it. Agreed. People want to do it. And look, if that event in Bradenton, let's just say that to win that event in Bradenton paid the exact same thing as to win the event in Gainesville, whatever the number is, let's just say they were even. I can tell you what, I would not be in Bradenton. I would not go to that event. I would not, just because there'd be no reason to go to somewhere to where it's not going to be the exact same thing as what you're going to race for a championship on. The only reason we're going is because the carrot is so much bigger than what we can get in NHRA. That's the only reason we're going. And I think if you ask across the board, why is everybody else going? It's the same reason. It's not to go, not that Bradenton is not a great racetrack, but what you do in Bradenton and what you learn in Bradenton will not apply to when you get to Gainesville. Let's just call a spade a spade.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. I mean, that's such a... Well, it's almost impossible to replicate that environment. Like, despite what we will do our best efforts to replicate it, it's oh, it'll be very great. Difficult. It's very difficult to replicate an NHRA surface because they've got 500-600 cars going down it. Yep. They've got the cadence that and the pace that they keep is unlike anything else that happens in drag racing, to be honest. The different types of cars. I mean, we got clutch dust on the track. We got stick shift cars. We got small tire cars. We got, I mean, it's so many different types of race cars that that's a really, really tough environment. And I see that all the time. I mean, I get a little chuckle. I hate it for the race team, but whenever you see a team go test at their local track or a track nearby, and then they're surprised when it doesn't really translate right. to the race they go to next, because it's just, I mean, you got the local track prep guys trying to impress this big NHRA guy. So the track's on kill and they've got it as good as they've ever had it. And that is not at all the conditions that Matt Hartford's going to race in Charlotte this weekend.
NHRA does a great job of giving us a consistent racetrack week in and week out. Now, there's anomalies that they can't, you know, being 145 degree temperature in Topeka versus 77 degree track in Reading, that NHRA can't control that. But they can control what they do day in and day out to prep the track and get it ready. And they do a phenomenal job. And they work their butts off to do that. And we all bitch and complain from time to time. But let me tell you, I don't know how many of the 30 or 40 guys that do that and girls that do that. I don't want their job. They are so underrated for what they do for us out there. All, you know, they're there way before the sun comes up and way after the sun goes down, dealing with oil downs, dealing with rain, dealing with, you know, racers who are pissed off about something every time. So, you know, but like I said, I wouldn't want to be anywhere else but NHRA. I just, if we want to grow this sport, cutting the purse. The first time that I qualified in pro stock, I got paid more for losing first round than I did when I lost first round in Bristol this year. Think about that. 15, 18 years later, the purse money was better then. 20 years ago, the purse money was better than it is today. That's wrong.
It is wrong. And I really don't know how else to phrase it, right? Like, because the politically minded person is going, all right, be easy with what you say next. But yeah, I've struggled with it as well, because I'm going, I don't really see, I have a hard time wrapping my head around that as well, because I look at it the way everything else has transpired. And I also, here's the other thing, and kind of to pile on to the Pro Superstar Shootout coming up next spring, I do think what I'm seeing, in my opinion, is racers taking responsibility. Because that's, I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm a big personal responsibility guy. Like, I'm willing to look in the mirror. I own decisions, good, bad.
Yep.
You know, that's part of, in my opinion, being a man, part of being a leader, part of being a business owner is you have to own it, right? We're going to do the right thing. We're going to do the wrong thing. Sometimes, you know, somewhere in between, but you got to own it. And I think racers, to your point, to allow a situation to exist 2 decades later where you're racing for less money, that's what I'm seeing. And I've shared that with a lot of folks, that I believe what I'm seeing, the interest that we've had around the Pro Superstar Shootout, speaks to racers taking responsibility and going, you know what? We're not okay with this, right? We are going to cast our vote with our wallets, right? We are going to cast our vote with our time and our energy, and we're going to go support this event because we want to create change. And I'm hoping that that's the ultimate result of this deal, is just a new economy in drag racing.
We're going to find out, because
yeah.
it's I don't know what's going to come of this, but you know, I did say to the powers that be at NHRA, if they were smart, they would keep their eyes open at what's going on here and not just dismiss it like, oh, it's not NHRA. Oh, you don't get a Wally there. If there was 10 of those races a year and those events conflicted with NHRA dates, but the payouts were the same, I can tell you what, it would be, you would have teams making some really tough decisions about what they're going to do. They wouldn't do it for one race or two races, but if there was 8 to 12 of those races a year, and the payouts stayed that high, you would have to think teams would want to go run for the money versus the Wally. And I don't know, but if everybody was smart, they'd keep their eyes open with us.
I think so too. And I think that's all that, I mean, to be honest, my personal belief is that there's a scarcity mindset that has permeated drag racing for a long time. Like, I see it in sponsor relations. I see it from track to track. And everybody, and you know what, I give a lot of grace here. I cut a lot of slack, because I think people are just They're doing what they've always done, right? A lot of these businesses that exist in our space are generational. Like, you know what I mean? A grandpa started it, handed it down to his son, who handed it down to his son. And, you know, I think a lot of us are just doing what we know. But the fact of the matter, at least in my opinion, is that there is enough to go around. You know what I mean? Like NHRA can be successful and this deal can be successful. PDRA can be successful and the World Series of ProMod can be successful. I mean, we're at a point in time where, admittedly, at the top of our sport, maybe there's not cars to go around, but it's healthy enough. And if you it's go healthy. Below that, it's really healthy. I mean, holy shit. I mean, there's more no prep small tire cars than you can. You can number 800 bracket cars at one race this past weekend in St. Louis. I mean, there's a lot of race cars in the country. And I think if we could all, it's kind of one of those can't see the forest for the trees moments. We need to like step back and recognize what's good for the entire community is good, you know, for all these little segments and series and sanctions. And I mean, that's all we really want to do is I kind of have always felt I wanted to leave the sport of drag racing better than I found it. Like, that's kind of been our goal is like, what can we do to grow and build the sport of drag racing so that whenever we ride off into the sunset or I get old or whatever, older than I already feel, I can feel confident that we contributed to trying to better this community. And I mean, I hate to say it, but sometimes dollars do that. You know what I mean? And there are people out there that are willing to contribute and will and see value in this because that's the other part of it. I'm hearing one good story after another from sponsors right now. Like you've got a tremendous amount of sponsor support right now. The drag races are a great place to conduct business. They really,
you know,
are.
NHRA has going for them that no one else does. And that's a great TV package and it's getting better and better and better. You know, Steve and the entire Fox crew are doing a phenomenal job. I mean, you've got announcers out there who, you know, they're calling it, you know, what was that an Anchorman? I read the news or, it's making sure that the fan sitting at home is getting the highlights and the lowlights. They're getting across the board. They're not getting any favoritism towards drivers. They're getting exact. This is what's going on, whether, you know, the team's struggling or they won the race. And without the TV show, you're not going to have the sponsors. So, you know, all it would take for all these, you know, 800 cars at a local, you know, in St. Louis at a local, you know, bracket race or, you get to these $1 million races. Just think of how many people would come run top dragster, top sportsmen, super stock, stock, and even maybe up into pro stock if the purses were higher. Think about NHRA would have so many people wanting to run a national event if the sportsman classes don't get paid anything. You know, basically zero.
And if you look at some of those comp eliminator rigs and operations and top sportsman rigs and operations, you can't tell me some of those dudes couldn't run either a full pull or a limited pro stock schedule.
Oh, they can. Absolutely. Oh, trust me, they can. So, but that's all we need to do is work together as racers, as media. And I believe that the powers that be within NHRA also want the same thing. And that's to help grow the sport. They haven't done it yet. There hasn't been, you know, we're barely back to what the purses were pre-COVID. There needs to be a substantial increase. And that increase may mean not as many events, you know, because everybody struggles. The reason you only have 12 or 13 fuel cars in an event is because there's too many events. If you only had 18 events for everybody across the board or 16 events for everybody across the board, you would have more cars running for a championship. You'd have more cars at every race. But until the purses come up that more people can come or there's more sponsors coming in because the TV show gets more popular, et cetera, it's a struggle to get the people to migrate up into the professional ranks. And that's just my opinion. I could be 100% wrong.
I honestly can't argue. I think that I've seen that be an issue at some of these like regional series and stuff where there's not like an incentive to move up, right? Because what I hear from racers frequently is that like, well, I'm really happy right where I'm at. We get the same treatment as those guys. We get the same, none of us are on TV. So that doesn't matter. And I do think you have to build in like some desire to move up the ladder because I mean, it's to be honest, going back to my Steve Matusik story, I remember how the experience that he had in Denver, cause he came up to me and he goes, man, when you race pro stock, they treat you different. And I said, really? And he goes, oh man, like they like brought me this packet with all of our credentials in it. And they're like talking to me and I'm like going to driver intros and stuff. And his experience was kind of being part of the, you know, at its best was considered a professional category, but you know, kind of those early days of pro mod kind of getting its foothold in HRA. And it was just interesting. And that really spoke to him going like, hey, I want to move up because this is how I want to get treated when I go to the races. Right. Yeah. So I don't know. I think certain things like that real quick before we cut you loose. And I appreciate you being so candid and so gracious with your time as always, Matt. Real quick, what do you think the number is? Because we've actually got an additional pro stock race in 2024, correct? I think we're going to be at 20 races. Is that right?
They haven't told us.
Okay.
No, that's they, I have pressed them for, is it 18 races? Is it 21 races? Is it 16 races?
What's the number in your mind?
It should be 16. Now, Greg Anderson will say it should be 30.
Right.
Richard Freeman will say it should be 52. Because they lease engines and from a business model, they're not wrong. From an independent guy with limited sponsorship and runs a business and writes a check for everything. 18 is a struggle for us. I mean, and it's hard, but look, we're in a position now, there's five races left. I can tell you our goal is to go out and try to qualify at the top and get small points and try to win all five races. So, you know, whatever the number is this year, that's what we're going to. But I think next year we've heard there's potentially more. We've heard it's going to stay the same, but the communication could be better from them to us is all, I guess, is a good way of putting it.
I think it's interesting because every single professional drag racer that I speak to all, and I will admit that I have heard it from like Greg Anderson, whenever he was the only guy that I spoke to in whatever it was, 18, 19, when they first reduced the schedule. He was the only guy that I spoke to, him and Jason Line, that were like against it.
Yes.
But I understood their reasoning. To your point, leasing engines, their sponsorship deal was a race to rate, you know, a number based on the number of races.
They're not wrong.
They're not wrong. However, I'm here. I agree, man. If you do like a real needs assessment in the pits of an NHRA drag race, speaking to professional drivers, I'm yet to encounter one that doesn't want to race a little bit less. Not eight races, but like a slight decrease to make it, because this is a conversation that's been going on a lot in 2023, is that the customer has changed. I mean, Matt Hartford is like a good example of the pro stock racer. Independent business owner, right? Doing this as an extension of your business. You're the customer.
Still a lot of time away.
That's rough.
Even though, you know, in the fuel ranks, the pro stock ranks, the pro mod ranks, the top sportsman, dragster, stock, super stock, all the way through all of them, they're all our customers, and I get to see them face-to-face a lot, which is great. And we do our tech talks here. You know, we're going to have another one Friday and Saturday. That's all good. But it is still a lot of time out of the office, a lot of time that your mind is focused on something else for that moment in time. And for most people out here are business owners. So that's the reason I feel that if they were pulled back to 16 events a year, and I know that's not feasible with all the tracks, and I get that. It's my wish, which I know won't come true.
Well, that's okay. I sure like for you to share them with us. Do you have any other wishes, Matt? Let's run through your wish list.
Okay. Wish list. I wish to win Charlotte. Then okay. I wish to win St. Louis.
Okay.
Then after that, I wish to win Dallas. Vegas, I definitely want to. I wish to win there both on and off the track. And then I wish to win Pomona so I can wear a white hat. That's my wish list. It's not that hard.
No, man, that feels doable, dude. Matt, thank you so much. Congrats on all your success. I wouldn't be surprised to see some of those wishes come true, dude. It's fantastic to see someone with your candor. I mean, I don't know if you saw the comments coming through here, but it's like, real meaningful interviews, sharing your thoughts and feelings, shooting from the hip per usual. And it's great to see you in the winner's circle as well. So send our best to your better half, and we will see you at the racetrack, buddy.
All right, Wes. Thanks a lot. Thanks, everybody.
Appreciate you. Talk to you soon. Holy moly, man. I can't get enough of Matt Hartford. I mean, he does a great job at these. But I do want to take a minute to remind you that each and every episode of the Wes Buck Show is brought to you by our friends at Redline Synthetic Oils. Redline has a reputation with racers and hardcore enthusiasts for creating products that perform and protect better than any on the market, and they've been doing it since 1979. Whether it's your race car, your tow rig, your motorcycle, or your lawnmower, when you think about lubricants, you need to think about Redline. For more information, log on to redlineoil.com. JT, buddy, we got a bunch of, we had a ton of notes, a ton of show to go through, but I spent an hour chatting with Matt Hartford.
So, dude, that was great, though. I mean, it's so good to hear someone else say it. You know, I mean, it's basically the stuff we've been saying as well. For a long time. I mean, you got to treat those guys like professionals for them to be professional, right? Like, I don't know.
You got to act as if, right?
Right. Yeah. I even said that to Elon Warner earlier this week that, you know, sometimes I think that we have too much access to the drivers, you know, spectator wise. Like, you've got to almost treat them like they're a rock star. And that the curtain only gets pulled back just a little. So you get a peek, you know, and you want more, right? You know,
it's funny, man, because I actually thought about this. Like, could it be argued that the every ticket is a pit pass, open pits thing is a detriment? And I know that this is like really explosive, like that people are going to like be very mad at me. But I do wonder sometimes, because to your point, I think that like when you go to a NASCAR race or when you go to a Formula One event or when you go to a major stick and ball sport, like it's a big deal to see the athletes, like to be within earshot of them and be able to yell at them is like,
you almost missed your own party, the DI after hours party, so you could catch a glimpse of LeBron James walking through Capitol Grill. Remember that? I mean, like,
that's a true story
because it's that big of a deal. Correct. You know, I mean,
true.
And then, the payouts, you know,
suck to me.
They got to pay, you know, it's got to pay so well that you want to work up to that. So you're working to get to that point. You know, maybe it doesn't pay shit down here, but eventually if you work your way up to become a professional, then it pays well. And it pays well enough that you have everybody trying to get in. So it is hard to get in. So then you probably have teams making decisions as, Am I the best driver for this team for us to get in or get up to that level? You know, maybe I ought to give this kid over here a shot who's killing me on the light every time I go against him, you know, but we have the money if we went together. You see what I'm saying? Like, everything snowballs at that point, and then you do start getting, you know, the more people that you have trying to get into that, then the more exclusivity.
There you go.
Yeah. That you have. And when you have that, then you get to kind of, well, like you said, you get to make your own show. I mean, everybody's trying to get in. Sponsors will come with that. I don't know. I think I think that's what you have to do.
Professional.
There's a reason. Professional.
I agree. And it's weird because I feel like there's nothing that has gotten people up on the tire more so, like race fans, more so than the way we do these invite events, invitation-based events. But like that is such a big part of the promotional aspect. Like that is a big piece of why racers want to be a part of it, is because they don't want to be the one that isn't there, but you have to create that atmosphere. Like it doesn't happen on its own, I promise you. I mean, we've seen, innumerable races come and go and huge events come and go and the ebbs and flows that we've seen over the course of time. But when it's something that's readily available to everybody, it's not special, right? And in that, I honestly think that I venture to say my two cents, like kind of continuing down this path, is that I think that we will see the NHRA Pro Mod Series become a like an invitational type of deal. I don't know that it'll be an invitational, but it'll be like a charter system. That's what I would do. I would literally, if I was the NHRA Pro Mod Group, and I'm not so sure that I wouldn't do this if I was PDRA, I would have X amount of spots and I would create charters just like Formula One or NASCAR, and I would sell them. And you buy a charter and you're automatically entered into all 10 races that we're going to do this year. We don't got to worry whether or not you're going to come. You're committed, right? I mean, make it exclusive, make it limited, create a limited inventory, and you would be blown away. Overnight, they will have more interest than they can serve. Overnight. I mean, if they decided collectively, we're going to sell 28 or 30 charters to the NHRA Pro Mod Drag Racing Series in 2024. Those are the only people that are going to be able to run these races. Screw all this different driver stuff, all that shit can, all of that. Not great, in my opinion. Sell charters, and I think you'd be blown away, you know, and you need to have places for the people that don't make it. Like but specifically with Pro Modified, there's a lot of places to race right now, right? I mean,
there is, yeah.
You can run Midwest, you can run PDRA, you can run NMCA, you can run Northeast Outlaw Pro Mod, you can run all these different big money shootouts that happen in the country. I mean, there's going to be some more events coming out of Kansas City in the coming months and years. There's a lot of places to race those cars, but you have to, that's what happened to the NHRA Pro Mod Series specifically, is that deal, you used to have to know somebody that knew somebody that yep. owed somebody a favor to get into that deal. You either had to sponsor the series, stroke a check, do something significant to get into that deal. And when that was the case, they were lined up. Yep, had people fighting to get into that deal, offering to, I'll pay for the TV package. I'll do this. I'll do whatever. My business will support this, because they created an exclusive atmosphere. And again, I know that our sport for 70 years has kind of been built on this come one, come all, everybody's welcome. But we're also, like, if we want to have a different future, we may have to do some things differently than we've historically done them. And that's not to say don't find a way to provide a home for everybody. I want anybody who wants to go drag racing should have the opportunity to go drag racing. But at the pro level, I don't think it's a crime to make it tough, right? To make it an exclusive environment. It's not.
That's what it means to be a pro. I mean, anything else, you literally have to like sell your soul to make it to be a pro, you know, in any other sport. So, and it shouldn't be any different in drag racing, really. I mean, like, it should be the best of the best. It should be the absolute, the baddest ass driver that's out there that gets a shot. You know, I mean, it's really kind of sad that it doesn't work that way, to be honest with you.
Well, I mean, and that's honestly, I think that's one of the things that has made the Gage Herrera story so exciting in NHRA Pro Stock Motorcycle, is that this is a guy that didn't bring millions of dollars to the table with sponsorship. Matter of fact, I think it could be argued that the Vance and Hines team kind of like forewent some sponsorship dollars in order to put a qualified, talented, uniquely qualified person on that bike. And the results speak for themselves. I mean, absolutely, they put the most talented kid they could find on a bike that they knew would win, and by God, they're winning. And it's been really cool to see. I mean, honestly, I think that's one of the stories of 2023. Gage Herrera, pro stock bike, doing what he's done, and considering the background that he has. I mean, this is like a street bike guy. I mean, this is a regular motorcycle racer that you can find. I mean, these guys, I mean, motorcycle drag racing is enormous right now. I mean, look at the Extreme Drag Bike Association, the XDA series that exists, Jason Miller's deal up in the Northeast part of the country. They go all over, but like, this thing gets hundreds and hundreds of motorcycles at every event they have. And to think that someone got plucked from there to go race in the big show, I mean, that's the way it's supposed
that's the way it's supposed to work. Yeah,
but it typically doesn't. I mean, right. Typically the people who get the ride or get the seat are people that bring Taco Bell to the table. Like, right, hey, my uncle owns Pizza Hut. I've never driven a race car,
but it looks really cool.
But I kind of want to.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? I think that's real. I mean, that it's great to see some people that are getting a shot in the sport of drag racing, not because they come from wealth.
I'd give them a shot if they owned Taco Bell. Like,
yeah, dude, if they owned Taco Bell or Pizza Hut or Pepsi Cola.
Or Wendy's. Oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. No, I got a sponsor, you know.
Who's your sponsor? This ought to be good.
Today it's Royce Freeman.
Oh. I thought you were going to say like somebody's name at Alcoholics Anonymous.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's, not today.
The old he's the head of Pro Stock Security, I believe, and anger management.
Yes.
So he's got that going for me today.
The NHRA Pro Stock Anger Management Counselor.
Yes.
Royce Lee Freeman. Oh my goodness, man. Oh my goodness. All right. Hey, real quick, throw the graphic up for, I want to touch on these subjects quickly. We've got a limited amount of time here. And again, I want to thank everybody for participating in today's show. It's been fun to catch up with Matt Hartford, but I don't want to just completely forego some of these segments we've been working on. Let's dive into Racer of the Week this week. I mean, we just hung up.
Dog. Well, that was the wrong one, but
it was, you know, super loud
volume. Yeah, but that woke everybody up, right?
It woke me up, right? I mean, I feel like I've developed a twitch.
Look at Blake in the green room. He's going, "Oh my god, Blake's, I worked like, so hard on that shit."
And JT destroys it. That's okay. Matt Hartford, obviously in the conversation for this week's Racer of the Week. Travis Harvey, fresh off a huge weekend at the PDRA National event in Carolina, Darlington Dragway. I think this is an interesting one that we actually received via email. The reason I'm looking away is because I think this is worth reading. Got an email from a listener of the show, and he said, "Hey, Wes, driver of the week, racer of the week." Let me correct. This is probably tough to qualify given this was such a big weekend in drag racing. Nevertheless, it feels worth mentioning that Travis Harvey, the Carolina kid doing double duty at PDRA Darlington, was massively impressive. He was the last pair down the track in Pro Nitrous and the first pair in Pro Boost. The guy goes like 004, I think. Let me see this here. Goes 003 in the nitrous car against Jay Cox, comes right back, gets in the blower car, and goes 004. I don't know that it can be explained how impressive that is to get in two completely different race cars, two completely different power adders, combinations. I'm sure they've done all they can to make the cars as consistent as possible from one to the other, at least with the location of things. But massively impressive, and I honestly don't know that there's a more dangerous driver in drag racing right now, especially fast door slammer racing, than the Carolina kid, Travis Harvey. So definitely think Travis deserves mention. How can you not mention Donnie Hager after his huge win at the $1 million drag race in St. Louis? The story has been well told over the course of the last week or so. Only able to scrape together the funds to enter the big day at the million. Goes there not with a toter home and a motor home and a stacker trailer and three cars and all these different spares and quadruple entered and all these other things that typically happen at big money bracket races. Goes there with a pickup truck, an open trailer, and wins the race without a delay box. I spent about an hour trying to explain the significance of this happening to my wife over the weekend and struggled. But it's never happened before. I don't believe it's ever happened before. I mean, you're talking about, these are the best electronic equipped race car racers on the planet Earth. I mean, these are the best of the best. And to see someone like Donnie roll in there and get the job done without electronics, without all those aforementioned things, sleeping in a tent.
Awesome.
Massively incredible awesome. Story. I think it's so far the story of the year. There's been lots of big stories this year. I'm very, very, like, if I look back on all that's happened in 23, I'm like very satisfied. This has been a badass year for the sport of drag racing. And these moments just remind you that it doesn't have to be pro stock. It doesn't have to be top fuel to create magic. And that is a moment that I believe will inspire participation in that event, specifically the $1 million drag race at Worldwide Technology Raceway Park outside St. Louis. You will have racers that never thought that was possible and like, oh man, I have no chance against some of these big money guys and the latest greatest dragsters and all this latest greatest state-of-the-art equipment that race all the time. You got Donnie Hager showing up and getting the job done. Massively impressive. I also want to give kudos to Chad Green, who had a fantastic weekend, went to the final in Nitro Funny Car. I've known Chad for a long time, and to see his perseverance, see him stay the course the way that he has and find himself in championship contention in Nitro Funny Car is massively impressive. I couldn't be more proud of what Chad's accomplished behind the wheel. And last but not least, Jamie Fowler sealing the deal at the PDRA Carolina Nationals and Darlington Dragway. Hell of a weekend for Jamie Fowler and company, finally scoring a PDRA top sportsman win, which anybody who's paying attention well knows is some of the toughest racing that's happening in the country right now. So huge congratulations to all these guys, Matt Hartford, Travis Harvey, Donnie Hager, Chad Green, Jamie Fowler, everybody that was nominated for Racer of the Week this week. But I'm going to give it to Donnie Hager, the winner of the $1 million drag race at St. Louis. Let's get a graphic made. Congratulations to Donnie. And let's dive right into Run of the Week, JT. I don't have as many because we're kind of, it's this weird time of year where we're almost in record setting season, but it's still pretty warm in several places around the country. It's still warm here in the greater Dallas-Fort Worth area. I can tell you that it's 93, 94 degrees today. So we're not quite there where we're going to see the record-setting runs, but we had some boomers. Doug Coletta, 365 with an 8, 336 miles an hour, 336.99 to be exact. Hell of a run. It was great to see Doug Coletta and company score his 50th win, Top Fuel competition, but do so in such fine fashion, running really well. I think we've all been waiting for the Alan Johnson, Doug Coletta pairing to bear fruit. I think everybody saw Alan Johnson, Brian Houston get involved with that team and expected immediacy, immediate results, immediate success. And it's taken a little bit longer than I think anybody really expected, but they look tough headed into these last five races of the NHRA season. Are you at all surprised that it's already the end of September?
Yes. I mean, it's crazy.
Just when I said that out loud, the last five races of the season.
Yeah.
That's crazy, man.
It almost feels, I mean, it doesn't feel like, to me, the season didn't start, you know, that long ago. I mean, it has, this summer has flown by faster for me than any other summer.
You hear that all the time, right? The older you get, the faster time goes, and I understand it, but it's still, when you're experiencing it, it is really surprising. Because me personally, I was telling this to someone this afternoon at lunch, it's like the last thing I really remember was like the 4th of July. And prior to that was like World Series and then like Christmas prior. You know what I mean? Like, it just seems like there's been these big landmark happenings and now the year's almost over. I mean, I can't believe that we're in Q4. I mean, we had a meeting last week about PRI preparations and that's really hard for me to wrap my head around, man. I'm not ready for this year to be over.
No.
I mean, it feels like, I mean, there's plenty of drag racing left.
Every week it seems like there's just not enough hours in the week or, you know, you're like, oh my God.
Football season's here.
Football
right?
season. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I wasn't ready for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Already week three of the NFL season. It's a really, really wild time in the sport of drag racing. But if you think about it, and I do want to reflect on this momentarily, I would love for everybody to really think about that. Maybe share with us in the comments where you went racing this past weekend or where you're headed this next weekend. Because if you really take a step back and think about all the significant happenings this week in the sport of drag racing, the start of the NHRA countdown, headed to Charlotte for the second of a three-week race, PDRA Carolina Nationals going on, the $1 million drag race, Hot Rod Drag Week in full swing, which sold out. I mean, there's a lot of stuff. Really, really great drag racing going on. And we literally just in that like two sentences barely scratched the surface of what's happening, you know, around the world. The amount of streetcar events, no prep deals. I mean, we've talked about all these things and completely overlooked the fact that No Prep Kings made their first ever appearance at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. I got to be honest, man. Yep. I don't know that I ever saw that deal getting to a point that they'd be adding a race like that at that track, like midway through the season. It was crazy to me. Like typically when an event is added, it's kind of like at an off the beaten path or a racetrack or somewhere that you weren't thinking about, right? Like, oh, this popped up and they had an opportunity to see that deal like pop up at the strip at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. Like that's a huge happening.
Crazy,
for that group of people.
Yep.
I mean, I bet Justin Swanstrom, I think about people like Justin and really that whole group. I mean, you think about this is a group of guys by and large, Chuck Seitzinger, Murder Nova, Dave Comstock, the list goes on. These are guys that like not that long ago were working day jobs, racing on asphalt streets in the middle of the night or in industrial areas with etched concrete roads. Now they're racing at the biggest, most prestigious.
Yeah, maybe not getting paid if they got edited out, you know, like, yeah, I mean, it's crazy.
I've reflected on that a lot this year. Like the fact that this group of guys, like there was enough interest and enough dollars and cents available that they took these guys to Australia. They went on a world tour, bro. Like that, and I truly believe that that exists for drag racing on a lot of levels. I mean, there's a lot of opportunity out there for our sport right now. If you think about it, there's few things more natural than a drag race, right? Like once you go beyond, like if you want to take a fist fight and make it safer, right? You know what I mean? And allow for man to compete against woman on a level playing field, young man to compete against old man on a level playing field. It's an incredible thing what drag racing represents. And I truly believe there's a much bigger, brighter future out there for everybody involved. That's like what gets me out of bed every day is knowing that there's more out there for all of us. I mean, do you agree, JT? I mean, this shit.
Yep.
I mean, does it get any better?
It doesn't.
Then side-by-side competition. I mean, mono e mono. I mean, there's so many things. It caters to our ever-shortening attention span. I don't know. I just sometimes think that we don't spend enough time laboring over. I was thinking about this last night. Last thing. I'm just curious what your thoughts are on this. You know how during every Major League Baseball game, we sing a song during the seventh inning stretch?
Mm-hmm.
Take me out to the ball game, right? We need to create an oil down song. I've decided we need to have a song that fans know that we're going to sing as soon as the tractor rolls. Like as soon as we see the tractor rolls, it's like fire up the tractor. Get that. You know what I mean? Like something, I don't know. Cause I think,
and we'll sing that like fun over and over and over at radio races, right? No.
Oh, yeah, true. I was thinking about that. I go, this is a great idea, that? Wes. You need to write this down.
By next week. No, we'll get it.
Well, no, we'll get it for the World Series of Pro Mod and all these other races that we got.
Okay, that's fine.
Now. Okay.
Yeah. You have to see. I thought that exact thing, T. I go, this is a great idea. I need to write this down. Like, we need to come up with a song that we sing during. But then I thought exactly.
Oil down song.
We're gonna probably have to sing it 70 times a day at some of these events. Like people, it's gonna be fun the first time.
Yeah, but we'll just make it a really long
beer, at the beer garden. Yep, yep. Yeah. Make sure you add that in there.
Me over at the beer garden. That's actually a good idea. Yep. You know. Anyways, all right. What else do you got for me, T? I know I've got some other script reads, so we got to talk a little bit longer. What else do we have going on? You want to ask me some of these questions?
Okay. I don't have the questions. So
okay, here I got. Let's do rapid fire. Here's some of the questions, and I want to remind everybody: if you've got something that you want us to talk about here on the Wes Buck Show, the Ask Wes segment of the show this week is presented by Air Motive Fuel Systems. Here's some of the questions that we got. First one: will the driver lineup be the same at the World Series of Pro Mod? Rapid fire answers on these. The answer is no. We are going to shake things up, bring some new people to the party. Very excited about it. Very similar in terms of car count, overall inventory of cars, but we will maintain our invitation format. But we got a couple of tricks up our sleeves to bring some new faces to the deal. However, I do feel
strongly. We watch that stuff all year, right? I mean, and we do. I mean, it's kind of, you know, who's performing? I mean, it was the tightest. You know, it was the tightest race of the well ever.
That was the tightest 32 car pro mod field in the history of the world.
Right. So we got to have great cars.
And I will say, I want to throw this out there. Anybody, if there's somebody that you think deserves a shot that might not be on our radar, let us know. Send us messages, send us emails, campaign for them. We want to know about it. If there's somebody
Mike Carpenter.
Out there,
his phone number is
704. No, and it's funny because let me pull this up real quick because I think it's worth mentioning here. Hold on. Where is it at? Scott Lang scored his first ever win at the PDRA Carolina Nationals, the Redline Oils PDRA Carolina Nationals this past weekend in Darlington Dragway. And it was really cool to read through some of the quotes from Scott Lang because one of the quotes that he provided our own Drag Illustrated editor-in-chief Nate Van Wagnen was, I'm trying to find it, where's this at, I hope Wes Buck was paying attention. And I gotta be honest with you, hearing that type of stuff just gets me revved up. The fact that anybody is out there racing right now with aspirations of getting an invite to the World Series of Pro Mod, that's what I'm here for. Like, that is so freaking validating and so exciting to me personally that there are people out there going, I hope what I'm doing right now, I hope the investment, I matters, hope the time, yes, the energy is being noticed. And I promise you, Scott, and anybody else that's listening, it absolutely does. We are 100% paying attention. And I would love to hear if there's somebody out there that you think deserves a shot at the biggest, richest pro mod drag race in the history of the known universe. Let us know. We'd love to hear about them. I'm very, very fond of my cast of characters, our roster of drivers as it is right now, but I'm definitely looking for some opportunities to shake things up.
And yes, Kevin in the comments asked if past winners still get automatic invites. And yes, they are
absolutely
for a lifetime.
They're exempt for a lifetime. So anybody who's ever won this event, won the World Series of Pro Mod, and that includes Mike Bowman, the man, the myth, the legend, Carl Stevens Jr., the late Scotty Oaksis, as well as most recently Spencer Hyde, automatically invited to the following or to the World Series of Pro Mod forevermore. Next question I got, how do we get tickets to the Pro Superstars Shootout? Well, you can log on to thefote.com and click the logo there, the Pro Superstar Shootout. You can also follow along on Drag Illustrated Social. And we have a soon-to-be-unveiled Superstar Shootout website. That'll be superstarshootout.com. Tickets are available there, and they will sell out. They're on track to sell out now. I venture to say we're 140 days out from the Superstar Shootout, and I venture to say we'll sell out inside of the next 45 to 60 days at the pace we're going currently. So I would encourage you to snag those tickets now. And I think the World Series of Pro Mod is on track to do the exact same
thing. I even shared it earlier and said that you buy a ticket and I'll buy you a beer. So
that's sweet of you. I know. You're going to be buying a lot of beer, big dog.
Well, people saw it, right?
Never been to the World Series of Pro Mod. Heard a lot about it. What can I expect? Great question. And I tell you what, man, I think that you'll find the most electric atmosphere that I've personally ever experienced at a drag race, and I've been to all the big ones. And that's not something that I say trying to take shots at anybody else. I've been to the U.S. Nationals 20 times. I've been to the Winter Nationals. I've been to the finals in Pomona. I've been to the PDRA World Finals. I've been to the Shakedown at its height in Englishtown, New Jersey. I've been to innumerable big drag racing events. ADRL races when the place was at capacity. There's something special happening down at Bradenton Motorsports Park in the World Series of Pro Mod, and I think it's this collection of the best in the world from all points of the globe. I think that there's this coming together that happens at that event that I've never experienced anywhere else, and I think it's because it's so different and it's once a year. I've thought a lot about this. We've had opportunities to expand that operation. We've considered doing 2-3 races. We've considered doing 5-6 races. We all these different things. But I really think the magic of the Drag Illustrated World Series of Pro Mod as it exists right now is the fact that you have all these guys that go and gals that go spend their year chasing points in the PDRA, spend their year chasing points in the NMCA, spend their year chasing points in whatever sanction or series, right? All different types. But they come together this once a year and they get to see people that maybe they don't see as often as others. There's a different air. There's just something in the air at that event that is really hard for me personally to put my finger on. But I really think that it boils down to the fact that we're all in. Everybody there believes what we're doing. Everybody there acts the part. They go there and they act like superstars. They go down there and they wear it, and you can see it in the way they behave in the staging lanes, the way they carry themselves, the number of people that are there. It's different. I mean, you see a team that maybe races 12 races a year, and whenever you see them at the track, there's 3 or 4 of them there, right? They've got driver, wife, a couple of crew guys that help. But at the World Series of Pro Mod, everybody's rolling deep. I mean, every team's got 20 people with it. Tom and Louie and all our cousins and uncles and everybody that we know comes down to be a part of this event. And I think that it would probably lose that if we were to do more of them, to be honest. I think that I think the time that we're all together is part of it as well. You've got teams parking the Sunday before the race, teams that are there testing all week long and breaking bread together at night and going, doing stuff during the day, right? I mean, it's a really, really, really unique thing because it's like family reunion.
Yeah. It's one of the opportunities.
Prize fight.
Yeah. It's like an opportunity that they've rarely had to ever line up against so-and-so driver from whatever other sanctioning body and to be in the staging lanes where they're all together at one time, where they do fly their own flag from where they came from. And
I love it. Seeing the PDRA show up and have those huge flags made and they're waving their flags and I'm going, this is what it's all about.
That was badass.
Like, that was such awesome. A special moment. And like you got Keith Haney down there, the owner or the founder of the Midwest Drag Racing Series, and you got the reigning defending NMCA Extreme World Extreme Pro Mod champion there. Like all these people that operate in different communities coming to this one venue. And I got to tell you, 100,000 to win, winner take all, is also a big part of it because there's this electricity around the circumstances, right? I mean, and you have to create dire circumstances, and it's tough. I've said it right here on this show. I said it during our driver's meeting. If I had my druthers, I'd give everybody that came to the race $100,000. Like if I had the money, I think they all deserve it. I really do. I think these are the best racers that exist on the planet, but there's got to be a winner come Sunday night, and there's only going to be one of them. And I think that just that pressure that exists, I mean, it brings out the best in everybody. It brings out a little bit of an edge. It brings out a little bit more swagger, a little more pep in your step, a little more chest puffed out. And that really is the difference. And I also say it all the time, like it starts at the top. You know, like if we're not excited about what's going on, I can't expect my racers to be excited about it. I can't expect my fans and sponsors to be excited about it. It really does. What do I always say, JT? You can tell how good an insurance salesman is by how much coverage he has on himself. Right. And I see that a lot in our sport where there's promoters out there that don't have that much coverage on themselves. They don't truly believe in what they're doing. Well, I can tell you, we truly believe in what we're doing with the World Series of Pro Mod. It is the biggest, richest Pro Mod drag race in the history of the known universe. And I hope folks know one of the things I've been hearing a lot about, this wasn't a question that I received, but it's for, you know, this week's show, but it's one I've been getting on the phone lately. Like, oh, do you feel like the Nitro race is going to overshadow World Series of Pro Mod? Absolutely not. By all indications, it's only going to help. And I said this lovingly to some friends of mine that had asked me that question. And I said, man, if you've got an opportunity to put on a drag race that John Force is going to come to, Ron Capps is going to come to, Antron Brown's going to come to, you have to pursue it. You have to take that opportunity. But let me not get it twisted. The World Series of Pro Mod is the big one. That's the biggest drag race. That's a huge, huge, huge happening, and it will never, ever not be a huge, huge happening, JT. Promise you.
I agree. Yep.
You know?
You ride the high from one to the other. I think there are
people that only go. I mean, we see it all the time.
It's short-sighted to think that way, to be honest with you. It really is. I mean, nothing would ever grow.
Don't you remember when we got ripped to shreds for putting John Force on the cover of Drag Illustrated? I remember DI49, we put John Force on the cover of the magazine and people lost their mind because we had built our brand on the back of Marcus Burt and Shannon Jenkins and Scotty Cannon and these hardcore door slammer guys. And that's always been our bread and butter and forever will be. But if you want to go to the big dance, you need a big dance partner. And my argument to people that were concerned about us like changing our focus or going to the big time or whatever was we're not bringing John Force down to the level of the local yokel outlaw racer. We're bringing the local yokel outlaw racer up to John Force's level. We're trying to make them guilty by association. And that's I want Drag Illustrated to be spoken about in the same breath as NHRA, IHRA, anybody else. I want it to be known that Drag Illustrated puts on the biggest events in drag racing, not races, the biggest events in drag racing. And we had an opportunity to grow our, you know, repertoire of events, and we had to pursue it. I hope no one ever gets it confused that like thinking that the World Series of Pro Mod is like less of a focus or less of a priority than it has been, because that'll never be the case.
Yep.
All right, man. What else do we got going on?
I think that's it, buddy. I think you nailed it.
I'm excited to talk to Donnie. We're going to do like a standalone interview. I'm just going to interview him. I think we'll call it like the Drag Illustrated interview. Maybe that can be another podcast. We can do another podcast. Awesome. How many have you done with Jason Dukes here lately? The racing business is popping off, bro.
We've been knocking out several of them. I mean, we've
had he's like 3 weeks ahead or something right now. He told me yesterday.
Yeah, we had Elon this week. We had, who else did we have? Oh, we had Tyler Crosnow this morning, which was a really good interview with Tyler. I mean, I just can't, it always just blows my mind how long Tyler has been in the business, and he's only 31 years old.
It is crazy.
Yeah, I mean,
I sent him a screen grab of a memory on Facebook, the first ever story. It was a Q&A we did with him in the magazine, a photo James Sisk took at Holly Springs, I think, at in Mississippi. And it's crazy to think about all that's happened in the last decade as it relates to Tyler Crosnow, right? I mean,
he
goes from working at a racetrack, manage a racetrack, prepping racetracks, to now running the PDRA, running Virginia Motorsports Park.
For the Outlaw Streetcar Reunion.
That's another event I miss.
Kevin Mullins went 411 in, I forget what year it was. He remembered what year it was, but it was a long time ago. And you were going to buy, we were joking about it, you were going to buy jackets.
Oh, that was a bad, we dodged
for
the
anybody,
on that one.
You dodged a bullet. For anybody that went in the threes, you're going to buy the threes.
I was going to do the Drag Illustrated Radial Tire 3 Second Club.
Yeah.
Because at the time it was like super controversial, right? Brad Edwards went 399
at that time. He hadn't,
right? No, he hadn't yet.
Yeah,
but like leading up to that, it felt like this insurmountable, like, oh, it's gonna happen. Who knows when it's gonna happen, but it's gonna, you know, not everybody's gonna be able to do it. And then it's like when one person broke through the wall, it just, they started coming hot and heavy. And we'd have had, I mean, how many radial cars have run in the threes at this point? Hundreds.
Holy shit.
Hundreds and hundreds of radial cars have been in the threes. Hell, they've made the tires considerably smaller.
Yeah, it would have been broke illustrated if you would have bought all the jacket.
It would have been broke illustrated. That's a fact, man. All right, guys. Well, hey, huge shout out to all of our sponsors, Stroud Safety, Redline Synthetic Oils, Aeromotive Fuel Systems, TheFoat.com, Racers Club, FlowRacing.com. Remember, support the people that support us, and we will see you next Wednesday, 2 p.m. Central Standard Time, right here on the Drag Illustrated YouTube channel. Thank you, guys. Appreciate you, JT. Thanks, Blake.
Yep. Thank you. Later, y'all.